rise. Oye, oye, oye. All persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, draw nigh and give your attention, for this court is now in session. God save the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Thank you. Good morning, I'm Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Lance. To my left is Judge Sholin. We're here today in the matter of Valkenburg versus Shinseki, docket number 072670. Would counsel for both parties please note your appearance for the record?
Sean Raven for Mrs. Van Valkenburg. Kathy Lieberman.
You should get up when you're introduced. Next. Secretary.
Terry Loring for Secretary Shinseki, with me at counsel table is Assistant General Counsel Brian Ripple.
Thank you.
Deputy.
Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present their respective arguments. Mr. Raven, do you wish to reserve a time for rebuttal?
Yes, I would.
You will be speaking, I assume?
Yes, I will.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Ms. Van Valkenburg is entitled to an earlier effective date for DIC benefits because the board's effective date finding is clearly erroneous. There is no factual predicate for the board's conclusion that Ms. Van Valkenburg did not file a claim for survivor's benefits on the jointly prescribed form under Section 5105 of 38 U.S.C. There is no factual predicate because Ms. Van Valkenburg's Social Security file was destroyed by the Social Security Administration, as all files are, after 5 years of inactivity. This is clear in the record at 1321, and the board has conceded that her records are missing and presumed destroyed. There is no predicate, and because there is no predicate for the factual or the conclusion that she filed a claim on this prescribed form, the board's finding for this effective date is clearly erroneous. And I cite and I invite the court to look at Kay versus Principi, in which the facts are extremely similar to this case. And in Kay, which is similar to this, a widow had filed a claim for an earlier effective date, and the court remanded for reasons or bases because it had determined that the factual predicate was, there was no factual predicate because the Social Security files had been destroyed. In that case, there were letters from the Social Security Agency Administration indicating that she had not, I'm sorry, that Mrs. K, the K, had not filed an application that's jointly prescribed under 5105. Sorry. In other words, there is no evidence that the authors who wrote letters for Social Security Administration had ever seen the file. It was completely destroyed.
Counsel, if I can interject, has your client maintained that she did file a application with Social Security or with VA at the time of her husband's death?
At the time of his death, my client has given testimony on two different occasions in the record. And in both occasions, she was unable to state unequivocally that she had filed this form. However, the way and the means to file the forms is no longer simply by printing them out. The way that applications are taken through Social Security is over the phone. And since applications are taken over the phone, she could not say, probably unequivocally, that she had filed this form.
Is a form over the phone that meets Social Security's criteria a jointly prescribed form under 5105?
It could be. That's the problem with this case and the problem in K is there's no factual predicate because they've destroyed the form.
And no, I'm just saying hypothetically, there is only a telephone application, is a telephone application that is valid for Social Security's purposes a jointly prescribed form under the terms of 5105?
It could be. But the reason why I could not give you a definitive answer for Mrs. Van Valkenburg is that we don't have the actual...
How can it be in a hypothetical world, assuming we had a record that demonstrated that the appellant had filed only a telephonic application?
Right.
Is a procedure generated by Social Security a jointly prescribed procedure under 5105?
I can't speak to the procedures that Social Security has in effect now or either in 1984, the time of Mr. Van Valkenburgh's death. However, when Social Security receives a call, and we've done this because I had one of my legal assistants call Social Security himself to see how it's done currently, they do not take applications by mail anymore. They actually ask that people call in to file applications. It is conceivable that the person acting for Social Security could have asked her whether or not her husband, who was deceased, was a veteran. And if that were the case, that could have been noted. I think nowadays they do a report of contact for VA and VA claims files whenever they talk to somebody on the phone. But I can't speak as to Social Security's procedures. This case is very similar to a case...
Well, Counselor, let's go from coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Okay.
In February of 1985, your client applied for the burial benefit, specifically the burial flag. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Is she asserting that she also applied for DIC at that time?
She had claimed that she had. However, there's nothing in the VA claims file to indicate that VA had received that. But that would be an obvious time for her to file the same claim for DIC. She filed for burial benefits and she filed for a flag. But under this court's case law in Shields, those are not claims for benefits for DIC.
Okay. But she's got records of those filings, but there is no record of a DIC filing at the same time.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Which I believe, it appears unusual that after all these applications, there's not a separate application for DIC.
And since we're dealing in hypotheticals, she could have talked to VA when she submitted her burial form. Or claim for burial benefits, and VA could have said, did you apply for Social Security? And she could have said yes, and VA could have said, well, that will apply for both. And now the Social Security file is lost, so a bunch of kudos, I suppose.
Yes, Your Honor.
How about 3.201, 38 U.S. CFR 3.201?
3.201.
Take a look at it.
Sorry. 3.201. Exchange of evidence, Social Security and Department of Veterans Affairs. Yes, Your Honor.
How about the sentence that says, for the purpose of determining the earliest effective date for payment of DIC, such evidence, which is obtained from Social Security, will be deemed to have been received by DVA on the date it was received by Social Security Administration. When did she first start receiving benefits from Social Security for the death of her husband?
I believe that she received it within the month of his death. I think there was a phone.
So when VA coordinated with Social Security, they would have discovered that evidence.
That's correct.
And that evidence dates back to a time period which you are now seeking benefits for.
That's correct. Your Honor, this case presents the perfect opportunity for the court to revisit Kay. I spoke with counsel for Kay. I called him on the phone down in Florida and discovered that Ms. Kay never received her benefits, and in fact her case was denied again by the board, which she never appealed. I find that interesting because I also think of a case, Steele versus Principi, which talks about the presumption of regularity. In that case, which the court held...
Counselor, this is a court of appeals and not a trial court. If it were a trial court, I'd put you under oath and then would cross-examine you. Okay, so let's limit your conversation and argument to the record, okay?
Certainly, Your Honor. I think that Steele versus Principi is very similar to this case. It talks about the presumption of regularity and irregular procedures. And in Steele, the court had found that the presumption of regularity was rebutted after discovering that what was regular was not regular over at the Board of Veterans Appeals. And as a result, in Steele, the court found that the veteran had filed a timely notice of appeal after the presumption of regularity was rebutted. In this case, this is the second instance, as in Kay, where cases come before the court in which the Social Security file has been completely destroyed, and there is no factual predicate for anything which Social Security says with regards to whether or not benefits were granted based on an application or based on automatic conversion or based on a phone call or based on a note. Everything has been destroyed.
So, assuming this, what remedy, do you seek? In K, there was a remand. What would that get us here?
In this case, taking the logical next step. The factual predicate, there is no factual predicate for the board's finding that she did not file an application. Logically, in veterans' benefits law, under 5107B, there's the benefit of the doubt. Mrs. Van Valkenburg is receiving survivor benefits. That's not in dispute. And she has been in receipt of survivor benefits since the date that her husband became deceased, since he passed away. On that basis, the benefit of the doubt goes to the claimant under 5107B.
I'd like to talk a little bit about Social Security's procedures for automatic conversion from life benefits to death benefits. What impact does the existence of that procedure have on 5105?
5105 is very clear. It states that an application on a jointly prescribed form filed with one is an application filed with the other. Automatic conversion, in our supplemental or additional materials we provide to the court, automatic conversion does not appear in the statute. It appears in a regulation, not a regulation, but it appears in the books describing their adjudicatory procedures, much similar to M21. Their book is called POMS. And in POMS, it talks about automatic conversion. It's my belief for Ms. Van Valkenburg that she is a claimant. And if you look at the records that Social Security sends in, they refer to her as claimant. So whether or not she actually calls on the phone, they receive information to make her so that she's entitled to a new benefit. She's a claimant. So
irrespective of the way your argument, if I may paraphrase, is irrespective of the way she comes to receive Social Security benefits, the mere fact that she gets them also should then entitle her to DIC benefits?
It's evidence that she has applied for the benefit, whether or not it was automatically converted.
Well, an automatic conversion, by its very name of being automatic, does not imply that she applied for anything.
The way I think of automatic conversion is very similar to saying it's automatically granted. There's no need for them to establish the elements necessary to show that she's entitled to the benefit. Those elements have already been established. It would be akin to something like a presumption in veterans' benefits law, such as a presumption for certain diseases that are due to exposure to herbicides. It's an automatic conversion. If you have lung cancer and you served in Vietnam on the ground, and you present evidence that you were on the ground and you have lung cancer, that's a rebuttable presumption.
Would it be similar to a hospital report that equates to effectively an informal claim for an increased rating if you're already service-connected?
No, because this is actually the grant of benefits. This is different. It's not necessarily a claim. Automatic conversion, the way I think of it, is it's an automatic grant. You're entitled to the benefit of survivable benefits, because you're already in our system, and you called us up or you sent us in a note, and we found out that the beneficiary who was receiving it has died. And as a survivor, you automatically qualify. It's automatic. It's an automatic grant. But you're still, you qualify. So I think automatic conversion is a little confusing in veterans' benefits laws. We don't have automatic conversion. We have presumptions.
Well, let us say that was what happened. Let us assume that's what happened in this case. Let's pretend here that's what we know. Getting back to the language in the statute, where it says applied on a form jointly prescribed by the secretaries and commissioner, would that language be then merely surplusage if she didn't have to actually file anything?
The language, I think the language is important, but I think it demonstrates that the language is outdated. People no longer send in applications by filling them out, going to Social Security and getting them. With the advance of technology, people now just either call on the phone or people get forms downloaded. VA is going all electronic. Social Security is going all electronic. The court's all electronic. When someone calls in now and they say, my husband passed away, they're applying for the benefit. In terms of how that relates to the statute, applying for that benefit is applying for the benefit both for Social Security and for DIC. The problem in this case, as in K, is that the file has been destroyed, so we can't see what Social Security did, whether or
can
not...
Can you inform us whether or not the Social Security provisions that you recently looked at indicated when this automatic conversion process began?
I can't answer that question. I don't know when automatic conversion began. I know it wasn't in effect in 1984.
It was or was not?
It was. And,
it was
and that's based on what I received from counsel today, and I presume the truthfulness of it from opposing counsel, which would be a copy of POM saying that saying something along the lines that automatic conversion happens and VA will not deem that a Social Security survivor application was filed.
When was that promulgated? From VA?
I believe this is from 1984. I'm sorry. I didn't receive this. I didn't file. It's extremely difficult to find copies of old regulations from POMS.
Well, Counselor, if we're going to use that as any type of a basis, probably we need to senior judge figure out how to get it to record by stipulation or otherwise.
I assume when Secretary takes the microphone, we can ask them about that document, and then we can determine whether or not they should submit it. Does that work? Okay.
The problem in this case that we come back to again and again is we're talking about hypotheticals and what should have been, what could have been, and what happened. And it's extremely frustrating because with the destruction of that file, this would be, had it not been for that destruction, this would have been a different case.
Taking a look at 5105,
yes, sir.
38 USC, it clearly talks about a form jointly prescribed. Looks like the statute's been in effect since 1958.
Yes, sir.
In some form or another. Is this a situation where the veteran or surviving spouse of a veteran could go to Social Security and Social Security just gives them a regular form? The individual files that form and therefore VA benefits are never do not commence because it was not filed on a jointly prescribed form? Or is there a duty within the commissioner and the of Social Security and the Secretary of VA to provide the joint form?
I believe there is a duty.
And is there a presumption of regularity that the commissioner would have fulfilled that duty?
No. I think the presumption, yes, you can have a presumption of regularity.
And with all the records being lost, would it not take clear and convincing evidence on the part of somebody to demonstrate that that duty was not fulfilled? Isn't that our case law?
I don't recall if that is or not.
If it is our case law, is there clear and convincing evidence in this record to overcome a presumption of regularity if it did apply, that indeed the proper jointly prescribed form was completed?
I believe that there would be evidence to rebut the presumption, and I think the evidence would...
I don't think you understood my question.
Okay.
If the presumption is that the secretary or the commissioner of Social Security provided the proper form, that the proper form was completed, and that's how benefits got paid, whatever the form that is, because I believe the submissions from both parties makes it clear we're not sure what the form is, but that's to be determined later. If the presumption is that it was properly completed, is there clear and convincing evidence in this record to rebut that presumption?
I'm not sure if I understand, Your Honor.
All right, that's fine.
There's clear and convincing evidence to rebut whether or not that was filed.
Is there clear and convincing evidence to rebut a presumption, if one exists, that the Commissioner of Social Security provided the form jointly prescribed by the Secretary and the Commissioner to your client, that your client completed it, and that your client therefore got Social Security benefits, and therefore the effective date of VA benefits would be back to that period of time Is there clear and convincing evidence to rebut that presumption?
There is no clear and convincing.
And then you have the regulation which says that evidence obtained from Social Security can be considered for the effective date for benefits.
That's correct. Yes, there is no. Thank you.
May it please the court. With respect to the program operations manual that counsel spoke to, I did not submit anything to the court because I just got confirmation yesterday from the Social Security Administration. I have copies of what I
printed
out. Well,
particularly the provision that was referenced by your opposing colleague with regard to VA not recognizing it as a jointly prescribed form or the words to that effect. Is that something that VA has published in a regulation someplace back since 1984?
In terms of VA not recognizing?
Right.
VA, the regulations are very clear that a form needs to be filed.
Is there anything promulgated by VA in regulation, policy, or anywhere that says that the automatic conversion adopted by Social Security will not be considered a jointly prescribed form?
It says it in the VA, in the Social Security Program's operation manual. VA doesn't have a regulation that speaks to that because VA's regulations and actually the statute.
So in Social Security's regulation that you're referring to, do you know if that goes back to 1984?
It's not a regulation, it's a program operations manual provision, and yes, it was initiated in 1981 as far as the information that I have from Social Security.
And that provision that you're referring to, which says, and I'm paraphrasing, the automatic conversion will not constitute an application, is in that since 1981?
Yes, Your Honor, and it's virtually identical. I mean, I have a copy, as I said, of what I printed out, but what I received from Social Security was from their electronic CD-ROM. To get the actual provision from 1981 would have to go to archives. But she said, and I got this from a general counsel person who works in the Social Security archives, it's virtually identical. There's no change. So this was in existence. It has been in existence since 1981. And I'd also like to draw the court's attention.
Is there a reason that wasn't submitted before? I understand you just got it. The question is, why didn't you just get it before when the court asked for additional briefing?
Because we tried to obtain it. Frankly, if you've ever tried to reach someone at Social Security, even through the general counsel's office, it's quite an endeavor. And finding someone who could actually give me the information, I spoke with someone early on, before we submitted our response to your court order, who is a Social Security attorney, and told me that that information wasn't available to the public.
Okay, if the court decides it needs that information, we'll ask for it.
Certainly. I'm happy to submit it. There's no...
I think we'll ask for it if we need it.
There's no authorization. I just want you to know. I mean, there's no documentation to confirm I could get something from Social Security, an affidavit.
You don't have anything at this point.
But all I have is what I printed from her email.
Counsel, what is the purpose of 5105?
The intent, as far as I can see from the legislative history, was to essentially make it possible for claimants to not have to do a duplicate process, to file when a claim is filed with Social Security or reciprocally when a claim is filed with the VA, rather than duplicate all of the information that seems to be applicable in both instances. I think basically it was to save time and energy on the part of the claimant, as well as to reduce paperwork and economic, you know, efficiency of the operations of the agency.
With that as background, if one of the agencies in this mutual provision changes the way they do business, is there not a concomitant duty upon the other agency to accept or create other procedures to deal with the change in application?
Well, no, Your Honor, I don't see any obligation. I would, again, just draw the court's attention to the basic premise, which is, in this instance, the statute. I mean, the Secretary has no authority to pay benefits to Mrs. Van Valkenburg earlier than the date of her claim, and the statute is very clear. There has to be a form filed, whether it's jointly prescribed or individual forms, which is actually what seems to be the history in this case. There really has never been one individual form. And
but if the purpose of the statute is to relieve the claimant of the obligation of having to apply in two places, if we follow the hypothesis that she phoned up Social Security upon the death of her husband and that is deemed an application for Social Security purposes, isn't VA skirting the intent of the statute by requiring her to go ahead and fill out something with VA as well when she has applied to Social Security for their purposes?
No, I don't believe it defeats the purpose at all. It's a convenience on, I mean, the agency, VA is trying to make things more convenient. However, VA has never, ever not required a form to be filed in any circumstances, and it treats all the applicants equally. And moreover, she was, Ms. Van Valkenburg was sent a form. She was sent, when she actually applied or submitted the information for it, she submitted a request for a flag for burial benefits. That was in December. It was December 4th, I think, in 1984. December 18th, and I can draw the court's attention to the record, at 163 is her application, which is actually, it's dated December 7th, she received the flag. Subsequent to that, on December 18th, which is in the record at 166, VA sent her essentially a letter of condolence and advised her that she may be eligible for benefits. She should submit the claim that accompanied her letter, which was the 21534, which is the same form we use today.
I appreciate that. I think VA did a good job of notifying her what her obligations were. But assuming she had filed a paper document with Social Security, I suspect VA would have filed the same document, sent her the same letter, because they wouldn't have known yet that she had filed. So to me, that's only so helpful. But again, getting back to my concern is, if the purpose of the statute is, as you said, to create this convenience to relieve the appellant, the claimant, of the burden of having to go to two places, then by failing to accept a procedure that Social Security accepts, VA is potentially overcoming the statutory's intent.
Well, Your Honor, I would not say that, because VA would not necessarily know. This is their program manual, and they are very specific, because if you look in the note that accompanies that provision, they recognize that VA does not consider an oral telephone call sufficient to trigger the claim for application for death benefits.
Just to be clear, are you referring to that memorandum that is not certified, that nobody can say how far it actually goes back? That was not submitted to the court?
I'm referring to actually the one that is in the record.
All right, where is that in the record where it says?
It's not in the record. It's in the response to your order.
All
it's
right.
The policy, the policy, general policy, RS 01702.410, the common application and proof.
Right. This is the third attachment.
Thank you.
Which is all I was saying with respect to what I obtained from Social Security is it's virtually identical. It's the exact same provision that was in in effect. VA, this is their internal operating manual. VA has no control and has no knowledge necessarily of their procedures. And apparently they didn't advise VA. In any case, our law, our statute is very clear.
Well, that's the question. In the ordinary course of business, does the Social Security Administration advise the VA of the application?
And there's a presumption of regularity that does attach here. And yes, in the ordinary course of business, they would presume to have called or sent out. Apparently, they send out letters. They send out notices if there's an automatic conversion advising.
Okay. And a copy of that letter would go to the VA.
No, it would go to the claimant and advise the claimant, because not everybody who applies for Social Security benefits has veteran status. What they do, apparently, is if someone files a claim or doesn't file a claim, in this case, she had been, the reason no paper was filed is because she was already receiving benefits as the mother of a dependent child, because Mr. Van Valkenburg was receiving disability benefits.
Okay.
And when he died, that was converted to widow benefits.
In the VA file, an agency over which we have jurisdiction, you have a copy of the claim that was made for the burial benefits.
Yes, sir.
You have a copy of the claim that was made for the burial flag.
Yes, sir.
And you have the follow-up action that they were granted and a letter of condolence instructing the widow basically to file her DIC claim with the VA. Is that correct?
That's correct, Ruth.
All right. What you don't have in your file, in your record, is any evidence that she filed such a claim. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
And I must say that she also has not been clear. I mean, Ms. Van Valkenburg herself has never actually testified that she filed a claim with VA. And when she did at one point in her hearing testimony before the board, and I would draw the court's attention to the record at...
Well, I think counsel for the appellant conceded that she was unclear and didn't assert or aver that she had filed a claim.
And I think that she talked about at one point that she had filed something with someone at the RO in January of 1985, and actually would have been her claim for burial benefits because VA received that in February of 85.
Well, let's assume that the record is unclear as to her position on whether she filed something with VA or filed a paper form with Social Security or any of that. How do you respond to the appellant's assertions around the K case, that we don't have the Social Security file now, so we have no idea what she actually filed with Social Security or whether she did receive an automatic conversion, as there is contradictory evidence in the record as to that point from Social Security?
Well, Your Honor, as I stated in my brief, K doesn't really apply. It was a very different factual basis. In K, the appellant actually filed something with VA. She filed a claim for lump sum death benefits. And when the board issued its decision denying the claimant in K, they never discussed the fact that she had filed this form for lump sum benefits. Excuse me, and whether that could be interpreted or construed as a claim for DIC benefits. It was a very different situation. In our situation, there is nothing at all in the record, and the record is comprehensive and timely in terms of when there's evidence of what occurred.
And I was under the impression that there is a statement from an office manager at Social Security saying that she applied for benefits.
That was back in 1999, and the statement was that, yes, that she had filed, and the only thing, I mean, you can only presume that it was a misstatement on the employee's part because they considered it filed when it's converted automatically. All the subsequent references and statements and reports of contact from Social Security as late as 2001. In fact, the board remanded the case at one point based on a joint motion to find out what the actual information was from Social Security. And Social Security clearly stated that, I believe that's the latest is in 2001, Social Security provided a notice saying that what appellant was receiving was benefits.
Is that one of the upside down pages in the record?
I apologize for that. I just discovered it, but I have copies that are, if you want a paper copy that's right side up, I can do that. Kind of exact language. The Social Security advised VA that what the appellant was receiving was death or widow's benefits, that she had been receiving them since her husband had been receiving benefits since 1980, and she was receiving them since 1984, and that she had applied apparently in the 90s for disability benefits. Social Security also, in their normal course of business, destroys all files after 5 years.
Right.
So
I'm not suggesting anything nefarious on the part of Social Security.
No, I
I'm just saying that we don't have the record now, and there was no record in K. And since there is some contradictory evidence in the record as to whether she filed something or didn't file something, it raises the point that the appellant makes, which is why doesn't the benefit of the doubt apply here?
Well, because there's a preponderance of evidence against the claim. The benefit of doubt 5107 is not for application, and the board described that at length, what I think addressed that in its decision. There is no indication that anything was ever filed. And I keep drawing the court's attention back to the statute under 5105, and actually the initial legislation, the act that initiated what is now 5105, was in 1956 under section 601 of the statute, and that said the administrator, and I quote, "The administrator and the secretary of health, education, and welfare shall jointly prescribe forms for use by survivors, etc. Each such form shall request information sufficient to constitute an application for benefits under both such titles." I mean, that contemplates that a form will be filed. And again,
it also contemplates a single form will be jointly agreed to by both parties.
Well, no, Your Honor, it says forms. It's plural. It says forms for use, and each one, I believe, that means.
So you think that it's okay to have a Social Security form and a VA form stapled together, and that suffices?
Well, they've always had forms, Your Honor. Social Security's form is Form 24. VA's form is the 21.
And there's no jointly prescribed
there
form.
There has never been a jointly prescribed form.
Even though it says shall.
It says, but it also says forms, and throughout in the regulation has said a form.
What about your manual, M21-1, that you submitted? At paragraph 32.05, application for VA benefits received by Social Security Administration. Have you got that?
Yes.
It says that, well, what is a form 214182, and how does that differ from a form 21534? Do you know?
The 4182 is a form, I believe, for death benefits. I'm not sure whether there's an earlier form.
Well, that paragraph I gave you says it's an application for DIC or death pension, including accrued benefits.
And it's a form that preceded the 21.534.
Okay, so it's just a separate.
So it's the same.
Now go down to B. It says use of 21.534, and it says 1 AVA form 21.482. I'm sorry, do you have that?
No, I don't. I'm just. Yes, I have it.
Okay. Under B, 3205B. Have you got that?
Yes.
Okay. When VA Form 21-482 or notice that a claim for survivor's benefits has been filed with Social Security, is the initial claim for VA benefits, the claimant will be promptly furnished a VA Form 21-534. And it seems to me, you pointed out to us, that on 166 of the record, they sent them VA Form 21-534. We are sincerely sorry to learn of the veteran's death, etc., etc. You indicated that that was a result of an application for burial benefits, but the policy in your M21-1 indicates that it's in response to either a 21-4182 being filed or notice that a claim for survivor's benefits has been filed. Why would you say that 166 is tied to the burial benefits instead of tied to the policy described that we just discussed under 3205?
Well, I certainly could be incorrect. I tied it to that because it occurred right after she submitted the claim for a flag for burial benefits, and it was triggered by, presumably that's what triggered them.
Why wouldn't it be presumably they got a call from Social Security saying, hey?
Well, I think that's a presumption as well. I mean, she's presumed to have been.
At what point does the benefit of the doubt kick in?
Well, if I can interject, just following up on that, they send her out, let's say Social Security gave them a call, and they send her out a 534 or 535. The presumption is that she, or the requirement is that she has to fill out that form and return it within the year, right, to get
that's
that
correct.
Effective date? Okay.
And she was advised in that letter that was sent to her in 1984 twice that in order to obtain the benefits, she needed to file a claim or submit something within a year of the veteran's death.
How does that track with 38 CFR 3.201, though? I mean, the claim, no matter when you complete the form VA sought,
well,
the claim can be paid back to the date of the original claim, can it not?
If something is filed, and then it goes back to the exchange of information.
Eventually it was filed.
But that's not, it has to be filed. It was filed in 1995, in March 1995.
Okay.
And that's
so now the
when
question
she
becomes, can she get an earlier effective date, and doesn't 3.201 say she can?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe it. It says that a claimant for DIC may elect to furnish information, and it talks about the exchange of information. It does not allow for.
It does say for the purpose of determining the earliest effective date for payment of DIC, such evidence will be deemed to have been received by VA on the date it was received by Social Security.
If information is received by Social Security that initiates.
Well, something generated Social Security benefits.
It was.
And that file is now lost.
Well, that's correct. Whatever was there was destroyed, but we also have all the evidence from.
Well, let me go back to this form that was sent out. I'm looking at your 32.05 and M21-1. It doesn't indicate that the letter that was sent out on the 18th of December should be sent out because somebody submitted burial benefits, does it?
No, it doesn't.
It indicates it should be sent out when a 21-4182 is filed or notice to Social Security, one or the other. So presumably one of those two occurred.
But I believe we can presume that, but either way, it doesn't change the basic premise that nothing was returned. Nothing was filed with the VA.
Okay, so just to get this straight, somebody files with Social Security a claim for benefits and then submits the information sufficient to award a claim 5 years later. The time period in which benefits would begin would be the 5 years, not the time it was filed, not the time the claim was filed?
It would be the time the claim is filed with VA. I mean, if you go...
Well, let's follow this. You filed a claim with Social Security. You didn't complete it completely. Social Security, it's on the jointly prescribed form, whatever that is.
Social Security would transmit.
But it doesn't, and Social Security pays benefits. But the information isn't really complete when VA gets this 10 years later. And 10 years later, they need the information completed. At that point, you're saying that benefits wouldn't go back to the date?
They would. If there was something in, but we have, and that's the problem. I took you back.
So I think if this letter was sent because either a 214182 was filed or because a notice of claim for survivor's benefits was filed with Social Security, then back here in December of 84, that's the beginning of the claim, is it not?
If she had returned, she still has to return.
Okay, that's what I'm
the
getting.
Claim. I mean, that's if you go to 5101, which
but when she ultimately returns it, that's what I thought I was asking. When you ultimately get this information, does it go back to the date of the original claim or only the date that the...
It would if it was deemed received by VA. In other words, if we're doing hypotheticals, if Ms. Van Valkenburg had submitted something to Social Security, which they would probably have had on record, they didn't say that what she had in her file was destroyed. They said if there had been anything, it would have been destroyed after 5 years. It's the regular course of business. If she had filed something that indicated she was applying for survivor benefits and that was available, then VA would have given her the earlier effective date.
But even if all the information wasn't necessary to establish all the factors needed for VA?
Well, but at that point, then the burden then becomes VA's to request the requisite information. But if there's something that triggers VA's obligation goes to providing her the form to fill out sufficiently so benefits could be granted. And in 5101, which is also this virtually the same, has been the same since 1957, a specific claim in the form prescribed by the Secretary, I quote, or jointly with the Commissioner of Social Security as prescribed by 5105, must be filed in order for benefits to be paid or furnished. That hasn't changed, and every claimant for benefits with VA has always needed to file something, and the Secretary has no legal authority to pay before a claim is filed. And in this instance,
if a claim had been filed at Social Security, was contained in their records and thrown away after 5 years, would the Secretary have the legal authority to make payment?
If there was evidence that she had filed a claim. I mean,
Wait, what kind of claim? A Social Security claim or a VA claim?
A claim for death benefits, but...
With VA?
No.
I'm sorry.
If she had filed anything, if there was any documentary evidence that she had filed for benefits,
right,
if there wasn't an automatic conversion.
Okay,
but the evidence we have points to an automatic conversion.
Right, but I thought you were saying just filling out a SSA 24 form without completion of a 21-534 wouldn't do it for the VA secretary. The VA secretary needs their own form filled out.
Or they need information sufficient to grant the benefit. If that information on the 24 was transferred to VA at some point, even if she filled it out in 1984 and it just didn't get to VA until 1990, she would get the 1984 effective date. But we have nothing. We have no, and all the evidence, as the board discussed, the preponderance of the evidence weighs against that anything was ever filed. And she,
so a specific claim in the form prescribed by the secretary must be filed in order for benefits to be paid or furnished,
yes,
could be an SSA 24?
If that, it would be, it could, I don't want to say that it would adhere to the actual language of the statute, but if the Form 24 was available and there wasn't enough information, then VA would go out and get whatever information it needed. If there was sufficient information on that form, then benefits would be granted based on that. And in the doing the legislative and regulatory research, when I was looking at the basis for this exchange of benefits, one of the other reasons was that the claimant, they talked about the claimant not having to file a death certificate twice. But there's also economy of the agencies here. I don't think it's purely for the benefit. It's to make things for the benefit of the claimant. It's certainly to help a claimant, presumably because it's a difficult time if a spouse has died. But there's never been anything to suggest that VA is obligated based on Social Security procedures to initiate a claim for benefits unless, and again...
I have your time is being up, but if you
would like
to continue.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm fine, thank you.
Judge Lance, would you like to continue? All
right. And I just wanted to say that I didn't get to talk about it, but Shields is also on point, I believe, in this case.
Thank you.
And I would ask the court to affirm the board's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. You have...
Unless the court has any additional questions for me, I have nothing further to add.
This is more in the form of commentary, Counselor.
Sir?
But it seems to me that the legislative branch ought to take a look at the implementation of this legislation dating back to 56 or 58. We're dealing with two of the largest agencies in the federal government, and we're expecting cooperation. Counselor represented earlier that you can pick up the phone and make a Social Security claim. That may very well be true. I don't know the answer to that. But if that is true, this court, which only has jurisdiction over the VA, needs some evidence, and whether that evidence comes in the form of an affidavit or phone records or whatever else, I don't know. But it seems to me that someone ought to bring this to the attention of the legislative branch that this is no longer 1958, and we're dealing with some huge agencies with overlapping jurisdictions in certain instances. So, thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Any additional questions? Case will be submitted.
Move on to the
council.
Thank you. That's a good point.
This honorable court is adjourned to further order.